The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
And away we go. Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Buckmaster. And they're off. I'm Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, Tom engineering and producing our program. And together we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on this Thursday, May the 28th, 2020. We continue to practice our safe distancing while bringing people together from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. Tom, are you ready for the hottest temperatures ever recorded in Tucson, Arizona in the month of May?
Is that your prediction?
Yeah. I think if we hit the high near 110, it would be the hottest temperature ever recorded.
Well,
in May.
And yeah, but we're not looking there yet.
Okay.
Phoenix maybe, but
yeah,
not here.
Oh, good.
This COVID-19 is kind of diverted our attention. Do you realize that the year is almost halfway over?
I know. It's hard to believe. Hard to believe. The Buckmaster Show contributor on health is Dr. Victoria Mazes, the Andrew Weil Endowed Chair in Integrative Medicine and the Executive Director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona. She is a professor of medicine, family medicine, and public health. Dr. Mazes is internationally recognized as a leader in integrative medicine. She is committed to health promotion and pioneering change efforts that solve America's healthcare system problems. She's the editor of the Oxford University textbook Women's Integrative Health and the author of Be Fruitful, The Essential Guide to Maximizing Fertility and Giving Birth to a Healthy Child. You can learn more about her on her website, victoriamazesmd.com, or follow her on Twitter at @vmazes. Let's go on the live line now to Dr. Mazes. How are you?
I am hanging in there.
Yeah, you had a little dental work?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and so I still have a slightly numb mouth, but we'll do the best we can.
You're such a trooper. And I knew you had emailed me, Bill, is there any way we could move this? I've got dental surgery coming up. And of course, I said, no, I really need you. So I am so glad that you have to keep your tongue away from that deadened area so you don't bite it. But let's begin with this article in the magazine Science. It's really interesting about these COVID-19 case clustering, which really is emerging as kind of one of the pandemic puzzles. Why do some patients infect many others, whereas many don't spread the virus at all?
So this is really fascinating. You know, we early on learned about this factor called the R or the R naught, which is how many people on average does one person infect. And we learned it was 3, and we learned how dangerous that was. That was the reason for the social distancing, for the stay-at-home rules, and indeed we flattened the curve, which is wonderful. However, now a new factor called the dispersion factor really explains that it's not all MERS do the same. Some people don't infect anybody else, and other people may be called super spreaders and infect many.
Yeah, I mean, there's a quote in this article that probably about 10%, Dr. Mazes, of cases lead to 80% of the spread. That number is just amazing.
Yeah, and not what we would have initially thought. And so I think what's helpful is it begins to give us some additional clues of what to avoid and what is probably safer behavior.
Like one thing to avoid, and this is something that I think a lot of college campuses, including right here at the University of Arizona, are struggling with, Dr. Mazes, as the fall, the college football season. You just wonder if it's going to be safe to bring groups of people together.
So absolutely, large clusters of people is an increased risk. And especially if they're in close proximity and indoors. One of the first outbreaks that we really learned this from was a group of people who were in a church choir. And they sang together for 2.5 hours. There were 61 people. 53 of them got sick.
Wow.
And 2 of them died. If those 61 people had gathered outside and at a safe distance, my guess is there would have been a minimal number of infections.
Other infectious diseases, Dr. Mazes, also spread in clusters. So this is not new, but I guess the way COVID-19, like its two cousins, SARS and MERS, seems especially prone to attacking groups of tightly connected people while sparing others. So, I mean, we have seen with other infectious diseases, it will spread in clusters, but this does seem unique in the way it is with these so-called super spreaders.
Yes, so you're absolutely right. This kind of factor, it's called the dispersion factor, is known in other viral infections. And it's just becoming better understood for SARS-CoV-2. But one study of people in Japan found, for example, that the risk of becoming infected indoors is almost 19 times higher than if you're outdoors. So again, that suggests that spending time outdoors is absolutely safer. And some of the highest risk situations are places like meatpacking plants, because there's a lot of people, they work closely together, and the temperature is low. And that also helps the virus survive.
Yeah, and that the virus seems to do better in cooler temperatures, but we still really don't know here in Arizona about the temperature effect, do we? We're having these temperatures that are unusually hot even for late May, but we really don't know what its impact is. I guess we will learn, right, eventually.
We are certainly going to learn more. Of course, we have two things going on at the same time. The temperatures are going up, and the rules about staying at home are being relaxed as we resume going out into the business world. So the temperature, the heat, perhaps is going to help us, but the greater contact in society is going to most likely hurt us.
Tom, my fine engineer producer, has an excellent question, this is kind of, the CDC's sort of gone back and forth on this about, does the COVID-19 survive better on hard surfaces or fabrics? They've kind of backed off a little bit on that, haven't they?
Yeah, we're starting to be less worried about surfaces as we learn more about the dose. It turns out you need to have a pretty good dose. So if someone coughs in your face and they have the virus, that's a good dose. Singing, which expresses the virus well, if you have it, could be a big dose. But touching a surface where there may be a few particles that then end up on your fingers may not be a sufficient dose. So we're starting to get a little less worried about surfaces. I think we still should exercise caution, especially touching things that are touched a lot, like when you pump gas.
Oh, yeah.
You want to clean your hands well after touching that surface.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you're going someplace into a bathroom where everyone's touching the same doorknob, you want to clean your hands really well. But perhaps we don't have to be as worried about, the box of in the store, a package in, that our groceries are in, that we're going to get the infection in that way.
All right, Dr. Victoria Mazes, you're going to take a little break here from having to talk as your Novocaine starts to wear off after your dental procedure while we take a break on the Buckmaster Show. When we come back with Dr. Mazes, I want to talk with her about how we build up our immunity. That is so important in perhaps warding off COVID-19. We'll talk with Dr. Mazes about that. But right now, I want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery. They are open right now. For lunch, they have some limited bakery dining, but they've got a very nice patio. We were just talking with Dr. Mazes about being outdoors. That can certainly prevent the spread of COVID-19, and they've got plenty of room for social distancing on the patio at Mona's Danish Bakery, the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, home of the Danish Kringle, open 6:30 in the morning, closing at 2 in the afternoon. There is more information on their website, monasdanishbakery.com, also a link at buckmastershow.com to my favorite bakery in town, Mona's, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. 12:15 on our Thursday edition. More with Dr. Mazes right after this.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
It's easy being green. Promote wind, install solar, drive electric cars, ban mining.
Wait a minute! You can't ban mining!
Green is good, but hey, no can do without the metals green products need from mining. If you ban mining, you'll ban everything green. And today's minds are on board, researching technologies that provide critical materials for a greener world. Being green, another miracle from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com. Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition. We are on 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk here in Southern Arizona, and we're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We continue now our conversation with the Buckmaster Show contributor. We're just so honored that she comes on our program every month to talk about health. Dr. Victoria Mazes, the Andrew Weil Endowed Chair in Integrative Medicine. She is also the Executive Director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona. We were talking in the first segment about the clustering that seems to be so a hallmark of COVID-19. I want to turn now, Dr. Mazes, to some factors that could prevent or at least help us in the fight to enhance our resistance to COVID-19. What are some simple things that our listeners can do to boost their immunity?
So I think that some of them are straightforward things that are under everybody's control. One is get enough sleep. Our immune system functions better when we get enough sleep. For most people, this means 7 to 9 hours. A second is manage stress. Whether for you that is taking a walk, and I know it's hot out, but early in the morning or late in the evening, whether that's doing an online yoga class or putting on some music and dancing in your living room, whatever it is that helps you, breathing exercises, but do something and do it regularly to help manage the stress of this situation. A third is eat healthy food, lots of vegetables, fruits, salmon, whole grains, that Mediterranean diet that we often talk about. These are the foundational things that you can do to support your immune system.
I have been boosting my vitamin D. What about supplements and COVID?
Yeah, so there are some supplements that can be helpful. You mentioned vitamin D. In a lot of people, vitamin D is low. And it's low for a few reasons. The way we get vitamin D is by being outdoors in the sun without sunscreen on. Well, we're all taught now to wear sunscreen. And so then our body can't manufacture vitamin D. Or we wear a hat and long sleeves, and that protects us from skin cancer. But again, we can't make vitamin D if we're not exposed to sunlight. So in those situations, a supplement can actually be a good idea. Vitamin D is an easy blood test to get, and that will help you know if you're sufficient or if you're really low. When you're low, it's not only that it affects our bones. We sort of know about that link between strong bones and vitamin D, but it affects a whole wide range of other things. It increases our risk of cancer. When our D is low, it may increase our risk of mood disorders like depression, but it also affects our immune system. And so, for example, in Europe, where they told people to stay inside, they also told people, take a vitamin D supplement. We don't yet have studies to know if vitamin D specifically helps with coronavirus, but we do think that it is an important part overall of having a healthy immune system.
You know, staying inside, of course, has helped to shield us from the pandemic, but some of us have been missing out on that time outdoors, which is so important, correct?
Absolutely. So remember that we evolved in nature. So as a species, up until really recently, we spent a lot of our time outdoors. And some people would say we're just hardwired to be in a natural setting. Other people might say that there's a theory that when you go outside, you're stimulating all your senses. So as an example, I was lucky enough to go up to Mount Lemmon over the weekend with my son. And we hiked, and as we hiked, I could smell the pine needles. They smelled amazing. I could hear the sounds of the birds. Visually, as everyone knows, it's beautiful. There are all these Douglas fir trees and ponderosa pines. So you're stimulating your senses by being outdoors. And then some people say, actually, it's just being off screen. just having those hours of not staring at a screen restores something that is, again, part of the way in which we evolve, which was to have views of the natural world and not either a tiny screen or a large screen.
I bet that trip to Mount Lemmon boosted your feelings about how you were feeling about things and, in other words, boosted your spirits. Am I correct?
Absolutely. So when you spend time outdoors, I mean, it was a wonderful respite. Of course, it was cooler temperature, too, which was very welcome. But there's so much that we benefit when we go outside. And as you said, our mental health is affected. Our physical health is affected. There have been studies that show that it lowers our blood pressure, it lowers our stress hormone. And, you know, the interesting thing is that they've done studies to find out what the ideal dose of nature is, or maybe I should say the minimal dose. How much do you need? So what would you guess is the minimum dose of nature to have a positive effect on our mental and physical health?
20 to 30 minutes a day outside.
That's a really good guess. So it turns out there was a study in England of almost 20,000 people, and they found 120 minutes a week, which is about 15 minutes a day.
Mm.
And it didn't matter if it was one 120-minute exposure, like me going up to Mount Lemmon and spending 2 hours outdoors, or whether it was in shorter increments. But across men and women, older people and younger adults, all different occupations, ethnicities, socioeconomic status, people who had disabilities or chronic diseases, 120 minutes a week. And I think the good news is that's doable for most of us.
Well,
the other thing is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, very doable. I was thinking this time of year, we like to get out in the morning and late in the day to do our watering. Well, you're outside, even if the watering takes, say, 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes in the afternoon, you've got 20 minutes where you are outdoors.
Absolutely. And there's another benefit, which is when you go outside first thing in the morning, it helps set the master clock. You know, we know we have this circadian rhythm, which is a 24-hour clock. But when you go outside first thing in the morning and are exposed to natural light, that light goes through your eye, through the retina, and it is a resetting of that master clock, which means that you're going to be awake at the right time. You're going to have an easier time falling asleep at night. So it's very, very beneficial to follow your habit of going outside first thing in the morning and letting that light reset your clock.
Now, there's another supplement that I'm taking. It's zinc. I'm doing 15 milligrams morning, 15 milligrams in the afternoon. Your thoughts on zinc, please.
So that's also a really wise thing to be doing. Zinc has been studied before in other viral infections and actually in other coronavirus, so not the SARS-CoV-2 that we're currently in. And it has been shown to make it hard for the virus to replicate. So taking zinc 15 milligrams twice a day as you're doing is just perfect. The lowest dose that seems to be effective is 15 milligrams, but somewhere between 15 and 30 is what's recommended. And you can do that with a lozenge, which then means it's going to coat the back of your mouth and your throat, which is where the virus usually inserts itself to begin with. So that's a really good way to do it. And there's a variety of lozenges. They were really unavailable for a while, but I think they're becoming available again.
And a quick word about breathing. I know breathing exercises are important and actually can help boost your immunity too. Is that breathing that should be done through the nose, or just some quick thoughts on that?
So absolutely breathe through your nose, because that's what the nose is designed for. It filters the air and it warms the air. But it turns out it also probably affects your autonomic nervous system. So when you breathe through your nose, you activate the relaxing side, the parasympathetic can't say that word, with a numb mouth, but the relaxing side of your nervous system. And in so doing, it helps balance the fight flight and the rest of the jest. So breathe through your nose if you at all can.
I hope your dental surgery or procedure went, I hope it went well as the Novocaine wears off here.
Thank you so much. One other thing about breathing.
Yes.
Deepen it and slow it down, because that also quiets the nervous system. So a great strategy during these stressful times. And thank you for your good wishes, Bill.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure talking with Dr. Victoria Mazes. Stay well, Dr. Mazes. Thank you very much.
You too. Stay safe, stay healthy.
Thank you. Folks can learn more about Dr. Mazes. She is terrific. You can find about her at her website, victoriamazesmd.com. Follow her on Twitter at vmazes. We're coming up on the mid-show break on the Buckmaster Show. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk about consumer trends and how some of the things that folks have been doing during the pandemic may stick around and be with us for a while. So we'll delve into that after we take the CBS network break, then back more in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined, because without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. If you're looking for some plants for your garden, perhaps the plants that will do well in this very, very hot weather we're having right now, they can take care of you at Green Things. 50 years and still growing. They are at 3384 East River Road, 13-acre site, plenty of room for social distancing, and just some amazing plants, trees, and annuals, and more. Green Things, AZ.com, and of course, ZocaloVillage.com. Well, despite toilet paper hoarding and panic buying, overall consumer spending has been down sharply since the onset of COVID-19, with retail sales, oh my goodness, just in March, get this, an unprecedented 8.7% down. Stay-at-home orders have caused many people to change the way they shop for things that they need. Let's welcome now to the Buckmaster Show on the live line, Sabrina Helm, associate professor in the Norton School of Family and Consumer Sciences in the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences at the University of Arizona. Professor Helm, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for asking, and thank you for inviting me to your show.
Well, thank you. We're so interested in getting your take on how consumer behavior has changed. What about the most significant changes that you see on your radar screen?
Well, what we certainly can say is that consumer behavior has been reshaped by fear, health concerns, and also the new isolation-induced kind of habits that we have adopted, in these past couple of weeks or now months, such as, for instance, familiarizing ourselves with curbside pickup, more online deliveries, and generally keeping away from groups of other people. I think that's really a dominant one that will likely remain with us for quite a while. It's likely that we have to prepare for prolonged or intermittent physical distancing for maybe 1-2 years. So these new habits that formed are likely to stay for a while.
A lot of people doing, buying excess. Do you think that's going to be around for a while, or are they going to go back maybe to their normal habits?
Well, a lot has been talked about panic buying and all that. Yeah. And if you look at it from an individual consumer's perspective, that's not irrational behavior. That's very irrational behavior in the care of one's family and yourself, right? And so when we think about consumers responding to this kind of a crisis scenario, and again, we intermittently may be having to stay at home again, we don't really know what to prepare for. So if you look at it that way, I think consumers will likely, if they have the financial ability, continue to stockpile certain items, maybe not to the extent as we've seen in March, but that perception that we need some safety stock here in our homes, as much as we can afford it and as much as we have the space for it, I would assume that it's also there to stay, although, as I said, on a lower level than we have seen in March.
We're speaking with Sabrina Helm. Sabrina Helm is the associate professor in the Norton School of Family and Consumer Sciences in the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences at the University of Arizona. And she's talking about how the whole COVID-19 has affected the way consumers have been changing the way they are prioritizing what they're buying, how the spending is really changing, and how they are prioritizing their spending as well. And globally, consumers are still spending, and sometimes they're spending more on staples such as food, household supplies, and personal care items, but we're also seeing increases in home entertainment. That's been, of course, one of the very big ones, the changing people being confined to their homes, so they're spending a lot on home entertainment. I want to talk about long-term. What do you see, Professor, as some of these long-term changes that might come out of this?
Well, as much as habits change, it is likely that some of these habits are also there to stay. One big area of change that we talk about a lot in the retail environment, for instance, and in terms of consumer behavior, is an increasing affinity to adopt technology, you know, to help us in our shopping chores, right? So we've already seen for a number of years that there's a shift towards more e-commerce, online shopping, and less going to bricks and mortar stores. That has, of course, now been reinforced with that crisis. We see some new trends such as curbside pickup, for instance, or home deliveries, which in terms of grocery shopping certainly spiked tremendously. It's likely that that's also a trend that's going to remain for good. We see very cautious consumers, depending on how long this current crisis is going to reshape consumers and how they live, how they can earn money, and how they are able to spend their money. It may also be that we see different groups of consumers emerge, maybe over the next months, couple of years. Yeah, there's that group of consumers that are focused on their health and they have the ability to stay at home and maybe work from home. They may have their job still, they have spending power, but they will be more cautious in how they spend it and what they spend their money on. And we'll have that other group of consumers that may have been experiencing layoffs, being furloughed and so forth. So their spending power is also curbed for a long time potentially. And so overall, I think there's going to be not that much frivolous spending, probably really more focused on what is of utilitarian value. What are the things that I really need around me? And not so much what are the things that I like and that I would like to splurge on.
We've already seen some of the big department stores declare bankruptcy. Do you think that trend will continue? How do the brick and mortar stores survive in this environment, Professor?
They are very different kinds of brick and mortar formats, right? If you talk about department stores, we have seen a transitioning retail landscape for a couple of years now. So interest of consumers in department stores has gone down for a while. We now, of course, see this all compounded, made much more serious and much quicker change due to COVID-19. But the trend was already there, the trend towards more online shopping. But in particular, the department stores have seen decreasing numbers of consumers for quite a while. So that's a rather difficult field of retail to remain in right now. In particular, if you're in an enclosed kind of mall environment where consumers are very hesitant to go into stores and be in this enclosed environment for longer periods of time. In other areas, we will see how different trends play out. There's also some positive trends. If you think about particular the smaller local businesses that really are hit very, very hard by diminishing consumption. But there's some hope there, too, in terms of changing consumer trends. Also, for a couple of years, for instance, we have seen that consumers are more interested in conscious consumption. They are more mindful about what kind of products they buy, more interested in sustainable products, for instance. They're interested in products that help them maintain their health and well-being. They are interested in locally sourced kinds of products. And so in those areas, those trends are actually supporting companies, retailers that can, provide value for consumers there. So it's difficult to say overall how this plays out. There's some, if you will, and I don't want to actually say that winners. Yeah, but there's some companies that are still doing well. You talked about home improvement, for instance, groceries, household items, and so forth. Several players in the online environment, they're doing quite well now, right? All of them really had to invest a lot into changing procedures, invest a lot in the safety of employees and consumers, so we need to reflect on that too. And then, of course, those who really have a very hard time now that foot traffic is so low and consumers are so hesitant to come into stores, that it's going to be very difficult to continue operation if this crisis continues for months, if not years.
Sabrina Helm, thank you very much for spending a few minutes with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Sabrina Helm from the University of Arizona, the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. She's associate professor there in the Norton School of Family and Consumer Sciences. The Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios continues right after this.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA Board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our Friday Focus interview tomorrow, I can now announce, it will be with the Tucson City Manager, Mike Ortega. So lots to talk about how in the world Tucson is going to navigate their next fiscal year budget in these very troubled times. This portion of the Buckmaster Show, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Our friends over there are ready, when you're ready, to welcome you with open arms. 3-hour drive to a cooler part of the southwestern United States, specifically the southwest corner of the Land of Enchantment. And I say cooler because I can guarantee you Silver City, we'll have to start putting up the Silver City midday temperatures compared to Tucson. We did that last year, and it was at least 10 degrees cooler because the elevations, mile high, 5,500 to about 6,500 feet. So looking for a place to cool off. The good starting place, southwestnewmexico.org, for the complete listing of great places to stay and recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. My pleasure now to welcome to the Buckmaster Show the producer of the Tucson History Podcast Project, Greg Gehringer. Greg, how are you?
I am doing good, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
And kudos to you, and I want to say this publicly. You've done a beautiful job job with this history podcast starting now. I think, what are we on? We've done, yeah, four that you've done? Four,
you know what? I've completely lost track, but
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, the current five, the yeah. current one, very timely, comparing Tucson with what Tucson was like during the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic.
Yes, and you know, that one was a little bit, in ways it was a little bit dark, but I think a lot of the information in it is valuable to have at this time. So,
mm-hmm. And in the past, you've covered why Tucson doesn't have a crosstown freeway. You've talked about an air crash that was very prominent, but some people have kind of forgotten about. So I think what you've done with this is kind of bring some of these, for the old-timers, things to the surface. Like, many people reflect the good old days, Greg Gerringer in Tucson. It was 1985, mid-80s. IBM was doing very well here. And people were saying things were really booming at that time.
They absolutely were. There were well over 3,000 jobs at IBM at the facility at Rita Ranch and I-10. And at that time, there was talk that they were going to relocate even more people from San Jose to this facility, conceivably another 3,000 to 5,000 employees. You remember working in television in San Jose and it being a real concern for some of the people at IBM.
It was a concern, and that was a great time to be in radio and television in San Jose, because let's face it, Silicon Valley was just coming of age. IBM was really one of the big players in the San Jose area, and there was real concern among officials in San Jose and Santa Clara County. The economic developers were worried, boy, we don't want to lose thousands of jobs to this new upstart in the high-tech field, Tucson, Arizona. And there were concerns that why would they want to leave the Bay Area? Well, the traffic was becoming more and more an issue right then, and they were thinking, well, also, we can do business cheaper in Tucson,
right,
Arizona.
Even then,
yeah,
Santa Clara County was 5 to 6 times more expensive than Tucson.
Yep.
There was almost endless amounts of land that IBM could continue to buy up on the southeastern side of the city. Mm-hmm. So this is, as we lead into it, that this is our next podcast. Basically, in essence, what would happen if IBM never left? And let's mention real quickly why they left. It was 1987 under Mayor Tom Volge, former political science professor.
Professor Volge, remember him well.
The ad valorem tax, which basically taxed everything on a conveyor belt, if you will. And IBM said, if you pass this thing, we're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you know, the city council and Volge said, yeah, let's see what you do. And sure enough, almost all the jobs, with the exception of a few hundred, were gone by 1989.
Mm. What about Texas Instruments? Were they a player? Have they
General Instruments was a player. And Hughes Aircraft, we also lost jobs as a result of that ad valorem tax.
Mm. So you'll be visiting with folks that that are going to put some perspective on this.
We are. And you know what we're going to revisit was a fantastic interview that our own Christy Simone from Wake Up Tucson did with his former partner back in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
With John Strobeck, who was instrumental with IBM at that time and tells some great stories. We may try to reach out to John, but listening to this older interview, he covers it all.
Yeah, I remember interviewing John many times here in town. He really was an insider on all of this, so that's a very good source.
From the beginning.
Yeah.
And one interesting tidbit was in 78, there was a big dinner at Westwood Look Resort. Governor Lou Murphy was there.
Mm-hmm.
The governor at the time, Bolin, was there. Interesting fact, I just realized this. Bolin took over after Castro stepped down in 77.
Mm-hmm.
Bolin would die in March of 78. Shortest serving governor in the history of Arizona, and he was one of the many people at this huge celebratory dinner for IBM at the Westwood Look Resort in 78. So we also mentioned that in the story a little bit too.
Wes Bolin.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did not realize. So his tenure.
5 months.
5 months. Wow.
but he was, you know, involved in that little bit of history of IBM. So it's a fascinating time. We're going to visit that. Hopefully, if everything goes right, maybe by the end of next week, if not the beginning of the following week, we'll have this podcast up. What if IBM had never left? We possibly could have turned into a major tech hub a la Austin if that had not happened in 1987.
Let's reflect just on the current piece. We mentioned the piece you've got up at the Tucson History Podcast at Tucson at KVOI.com, comparing what Tucson, how Tucson weathered the Spanish flu of 1918. And the schools did close, didn't they?
The schools,
the University of Arizona closed, right?
They did, but the students actually remained in place on the campus.
Really?
Yes. Most of this in Tucson really happened between the very end of September of 18 and late January of 1919. There was another wave, but every subsequent wave after the beginning of 1919 became less and less potent until the Spanish flu became just a seasonal flu that didn't even infect respiratory systems by the time it was all said and done.
The Spanish flu hit the indigenous population here in Arizona especially hard, and that likens to what we are seeing
Absolutely.
Up on the Navajo Nation. I'm wondering why.
Well, part of it is just, you know, the sanitary conditions, the fact that
up on the reservation,
you're talking about as many as 60% of the population still don't have running water.
Yeah, and Representative O'Halloran, who was on the program this week, was talking about that people in Washington have no clue, first, about how large the Navajo Nation is, and second, the sanitary conditions, running water.
And also access to medical care.
Yeah.
I mean, there are obviously clinics and there are doctors, but it's sometimes very difficult for people to travel the distances necessary. Mm-hmm. It's an hour for many of them to get to a grocery store. It's a very tough life for the people on the Navajo Reservation.
All right. So where can people find out about the, and it's your pieces are very listener friendly.
They are. And this one is, you know, it's fairly short, but 1918, The Forgotten Pandemic, KVOI.com, Google Play and Apple Podcasts. I do encourage you to give it a listen and then be on the lookout for What If IBM Never Left, which will hit in a week or week and a half or so.
All right, Greg Gehringer, thank you so much, Greg, for everything you have done with the Tucson History Podcast. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you, Bill.
That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. Coming up tomorrow, Mike Ortega, Tucson City Manager, will be our Friday Focus interview. Also joining me in the questioning, Sarah Garrett Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star. That's going to do it today for the Buckmaster Show on this kind of week that feels like this should be the midweek edition, but it's already Thursday, and of course that's from our shortened holiday week. Coming up next, Dave Ramsey talking about money, and if there was ever a time to talk about money, how to save it, this is the time. On behalf of Tom Fairbanks, thank you very much, Tom. Always a great job making sure everything is running very smoothly the way we like it on the Buckmaster Show. Hope everybody has a great afternoon. Try to stay cool on this rather unusual hot late May day.